Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My special guest today is Dr. David James, and he is a hypnotherapist. He comes from a law enforcement background, but you naysayers out there with hypnotherapy, I want you to listen to this guy, okay? It's more of an established fact now than it is some sort of pseudoscience. So I want you to hear Dr. David James today, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, remember, you can always catch me at MathersRodney at yahoo.com. It's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Dr. David James. He's a hypnotherapist, and David holds a PhD from California Coast University, Santa Ana, California. And David comes from the law enforcement background, and having been a deputy in the LA County Sheriff's Department, and he's done other things in law enforcement as well. David, welcome to the Journey of Hope.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. Hypnotherapy, it's not what we thought of it 20 years ago, is it? It's really a viable technique for addressing things like addiction, right?
Yeah, it is really multifaceted, from physical ailments to emotional issues to motivation to dream work. I mean, just lots of very proven and powerful modalities that make some difference in people's lives.
Okay. Well, let's focus on one. Just to get started, let's look at addiction, which is, something that this particular audience kind of struggles with sometimes. What would be your process in helping someone that had an addiction? How do you do that through hypnotherapy? How does that work?
Well, it's a little bit of context. It's interesting. I served for a long time as a drug and alcohol counselor. I've worked in rehab centers and, inpatient hospitals,
right.
And so I have a lot of experience in this regard, and
okay.
It was that experience that really pushed me into working with hypnotherapy. So, this is not just kind of an academic experience that I'm talking about. This is real time for me. So one of the things that we understand is that very often when it comes to addictions, that we're dealing with intense, repetitive behaviors and habitual thinking, frankly.
Okay.
And so very often what we do is we begin to enter into the subconscious mind where that life script is, that our subconscious holds 90% of all of our energies and patterns and processes and everything that's real in our lives. And so the life script that says I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic, and that there's all these kinds of adaptive or maladaptive behaviors that are around that. That's where we go. We go to the subconscious, and we begin to unravel that knot, if you would, of addiction. We look at understanding how the sympathetic and the parasympathetic parts of the central nervous system interact with each other in addictions, and we find ways to increase the sympathetic response, which is much more of the relaxation and the creative and the life-giving response, and we find a way to dial down the parasympathetic, which is what we most commonly call fight or flight, where addicts spend a lot of time living their lives in fight or flight.
And does this affect the decision-making process?
Well, yeah, because what happens is that when you begin to expand the range of possibilities that are in front of you, and you start to experience alternative thinking, other than mm-hmm. I need a drink, I need a snort, you know, I mean, all kinds of addictions. Right. I need to go shopping. I need to jump off a bungee cord, an adrenaline junkie. When we start to look at all these options that are available and start kind of, if you would, turning off or dialing down the maladaptive ones and instead dialing up the productive ones, right. That's when we begin to see change.
Okay. And what about affecting someone, say, empathy level, helping someone develop more empathy? Does that process help with that as well?
Well, sure, because, you know, studies have shown that empathy is a trait, a process that can be developed like any trait or process. And very often, alcoholics and addicts don't have much empathy because they're so caught up in the drama of their own lives.
And
I don't use that in kind of negatively. It's just,
right.
You know, the world has fallen apart, and the only way to survive is to go into a bottle or into a beetle or whatever. And so there's really little orientation or understanding about how their lives affect others. I mean, in the program Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a whole step designed to finding a way to reconnect with other people. And so in this process, we develop empathy. We begin to let people in hypnosis see themselves through other people's eyes.
Right.
And to begin to engage that kind of cognitive and that emotional set point from there.
And I find that a lot of ex-offenders, and I've had a lot of professionals tell me, and I was probably guilty of this myself, that lack of empathy is oftentimes at the root of getting yourself in enough trouble to where you lose your freedom. And so that's a big issue around here on this podcast, and I think that you've addressed it well. The process would be the same for, say, someone that had an anger issue as it would be for treating someone with an addiction of some sort?
Well, in some ways, yes, because, of course, we also know that people can be addicted to their anger.
Yes.
You know, we know there's two types of addictions. There's process addictions and substance addictions. The substance addictions are the ones that we're most familiar with, you know, the drinking and the drugging. But there are process addictions, too. And that's the shopping, that's the sex, that's the anger in this case.
Right.
And what happens is that what neuropsychology and psychoneuroimmunology have shown us in the last 15 years is that every time that we have a thought, that our brain releases 1,500 separate chemicals with every thought, not just the big ones, but with every thought. And that establishes what we call an emotional snapshot. And in that moment, the brain can then recall any experiences of that previously. So, for example, when you hear an oldies song on the radio, and all of a sudden you're back with long hair and driving your car down the California highway and
right.
have all these good memories, right. This emotional snapshot happened enough in the past that it became part of the script of your subconscious. Well, it's the same thing with anger. You know, anger is a wonderful emotion when it's understood and used in the way that it seems to have been designed, which is to prevent us from having our boundaries violated, prevents us or allows us to step in to help other people when the moment is right. But when the anger becomes really the identity, that's very similar to being, hi, I'm an alcoholic, I'm, you know, an addict. If anger becomes the identity, then what we do is we have to go back into the subconscious, and we have to unravel the knot of that, mm-hmm. see if we can kind of diminish, dial the needle down a bit, and offer different and alternative kinds of opportunities to have creative responses to what used to be automatic go buttons for the anger.
And do you talk about alternate responses when you're doing this treatment?
Not only do we talk about it, we practice it.
Excellent.
We put the client into the hypnotic state, into mm-hmm. trance,
mm-hmm.
and in the business we call it circle therapy. And what that is that you know, we have the stressor, the anger comes up, and we teach the client using very similar to the Sedona technique, because it's kind of a release process. We teach the client how to let go of the anger in that moment, just to let it pass in that moment. Mm-hmm. Then from there, we have already predetermined what's going to be an alternative response, you know, peace or gratitude or joy or creative problem solving. And so by doing that, we have them release the anger, and then we have them dial up the alternative response. And it takes some work. It takes some doing, because like all patterns, all habits in our personality, what we discover is that anger is deeply rooted in there. It's self-defensive. I mean, that's why people, you know, get pathologically angry. They're often very afraid. I've often said that anger, especially for men, I do a lot of work with men, that in the West especially, that that anger is the guard at the door where sadness is held captive.
Wow. Okay.
Anger is the door, the guard at the door where sadness is held captive. That underneath anger, there's usually a lot of grief that needs to happen, especially with people who are in recovery. You know, when we're in recovery, we realize the mess we've made of our lives. We realize the people we've hurt. We realize the wrong choices that we've had. But rather than feel the feelings, even though that's what the program suggests, feel the feelings, we often keep it locked up, and anger is our go-to response. Mm-hmm. And so we do that work by teaching every time, working every time with the thought to come up, the anger feeling to come up, to not deny it, but not overreact either. Rather to let it be as long as it needs to be, let it pass, and then introduce and experience an alternative emotion and thought.
Excellent. Very cool. Listen, David, we're going to take a real quick break. This is a great discussion. More with David James, Dr. David James, right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all. You got an idea for the show? You know someone who would be a good guest on the Journey of Hope? Well, let me know about it, and we'll definitely check it out. We've had guests on the show before from your request and done topics by your request before, and so send on the information to me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com, mathersrodney @yahoo.com. And welcome back. My guest today is Dr. David James. We're talking about hypnotherapy. And David, why is it that this may seem like a little kooky question, but why is it that hypnotherapy is so effective? What is it about it?
Well, it's so effective because what we realize is that the subconscious mind is where all our power is. You know, if you can imagine an image, a picture, a drawing of an iceberg, you know, that the conscious mind, which is the 10% of our day-to-day processing, turning left at the traffic light, turning the oven on to cook the food, designing a new operating system for a computer. All these things are done at the conscious level, but that's only literally the tip of the iceberg. If you go down to the subconscious mind, you drop below the conscious, that's where the rest of that huge iceberg is, and that's where, that's where the subconscious mind is, and that's where our patterns, our programs, our automatic responses, our bodily responses, our interactions between our mind and body, that's where this all is rooted. And so hypnotherapy is so important and powerful because that's the work we do in that realm. You know, I read a book yesterday where somebody said that the conscious mind is the driver of the car, and the subconscious mind is the autopilot that keeps the whole boat afloat. And I can mix my metaphors. So that's why it's so important, because that's why we work in that deep, powerful subconscious area.
When you get into that subconscious area, I would imagine one of the things that you would work with would be impulse control, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what we do, because remember, from the time we're born until about 8 years old, we just absorb everything. I mean, I have some little grandkids right now and that are that age. They're 3 and 4. And everything that comes along, you know, they taste it, they touch it, they feel it, they imbibe it, they become it for the moment. And they're establishing what we call known associations, you know, that every time that they're a good boy or girl, a mommy gives them a piece of chocolate cake for the rest of their life, or that's a consistent practice, that for the rest of their life, they equate chocolate cake with being good, and sometimes that's the genesis of, for example, eating disorders. You know, that somehow there's a reward link at the deep subconscious emotional level between being a good boy or girl and food. Conversely, if they're playing with the neighborhood dog, who's always been friendly, and then all of a sudden the dog bites them and is terrifying, that if that's a strong enough hit on their subconscious mind, for the rest of their life, they'd be terrified of the dog. So the point of the story is that all of this comes together, and what we see is that things that we think are beyond our control, i.e., like, for example, impulse control, are actually very workable patterns once you understand how to engage it, how to dialogue with it, how to experience it, and how to process it.
David, when you were in law enforcement, were you into the hypnotherapy at that point?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, if you were, it must have been frustrating to see people that you thought you could help, but there really wasn't much you could do for them in that capacity, I don't guess. But I would imagine you saw a lot of impulse, you know, or lack of impulse control, a lot of lack of empathy and that sort of thing in your day-to-day work, right?
Oh, yeah, on both sides of the badge, actually. Matter of fact, the larger departments, like the Los Angeles Sheriff Department and LAPD, have psychological services units where officers undergo hypnosis after they had traumatic shootings or major violent encounters. So law enforcement is recognizing the value of it, but primarily with the provider. Yeah, there are. I know one of the instructors at the school that I learned hypnosis at works in the LA County Jail, men's jail, and she's doing group hypnosis work there with inmates, with prisoners, to help them begin to understand they're obviously understanding the consequences of the behavior by being in jail, but instead helping them understand that there's ways to catch that impulse before it manifests, if you would, to catch it before they hit somebody or shoot somebody or stab somebody or rob somebody.
Hey, can everybody be hypnotized? Or are there people that can't be hypnotized?
Everybody can be hypnotized if they want to be. That's what I tell people. Usually people ask me two questions. The first is, can I be hypnotized? And the second is, will you make me quack like a duck? And my answer is, yes, you can be hypnotized if you want to, and you will only quack like a duck if you want to. So that's kind of that elicited the response I was hoping for with that laugh. But everybody can. What we've learned over the course of the last 30 years or so is that there are degrees of what we call suggestibility. Some people are easier to hypnotize than others, but understanding the right brain and the left brain and the way that the right brain works differently than the left brain. We now know how to hypnotize anybody that wants to go, because the person whose left brain, which is analytical and thinking and, you know, book learning and all that kind of thing, their mind works differently than the right brain, than the artist. And so the way it is different, but once we get them there, the work is the same.
The reason I chuckle, David, is when I was in college, I went to a small liberal arts school, and every Thursday morning we had convocation, and required, by the way. And we would have guest speakers come in, and one time we had a hypnotist come in. And this dude had people walking around quacking like a duck, man. I mean, that's what he was doing, you know. So it was, I think that a lot of people equate hypnosis with that sort of thing and don't realize that there's a serious side to it, that in which people can really be helped. Before we go, David, the first thing I'd like for you to do is a word of encouragement for the ex-offenders that might be listening today on how hypnosis could help them with some of their issues, and then maybe you can tell us about how we can find out more about you.
Yeah, I think that what's really important is to understand is that when we create problems for ourselves in our lives through drug and alcohol abuse, anger, misuse, and we find ourselves in the criminal justice system or on the other side of the civil divorce system, or we find ourselves in recovery of one time or another, and we're wondering what to do with the mess we've made with our lives, it's important to know that literally they thought themselves into the mess, and that they can work themselves out. I've always said that with hypnosis, whatever the mind created, the mind can heal. Obviously, in the recovery world, we talk a lot about the higher power. Well, the higher power, if we were going to find it somewhere, it's in the subconscious mind. So hypnotherapy is a valid and powerful tool to be used to live one day at a time. To get a hold of me, my website is davidjameshypnosis.com, all one word, davidjameshypnosis.com. And I work personally with people in Los Angeles and Skype around the world.
Excellent. David James, Dr. David James, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the Journey of Hope today.
I'm glad to be here, and maybe we'll talk to you again soon.
That sounds great. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, sure do love to hear from you. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Love to know how you're doing. If you've had some success in your job search or, I don't know, anything you want to pass on, pass it on to me, and I'll pass it on to the audience for you, okay? That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. And I want to thank my special guest today, Dr. David James. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.